This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. When Joan Myers Brown first started to study ballet in Philadelphia in the 1930s, dance schools were essentially segregated, and the opportunity for a professional ballet career for African-American dancers was nearly non-existent. Nevertheless, she stuck with it, trained with a white friend before school, and managed eventually to become one of the first African-American dancers in a class taught by the Ballet Guild of Philadelphia. Joan Myers Brown had to fight for the opportunity she got in dance, and she wanted to help make things easier for the next generation of African-American dancers. She founded the Philadelphia School of Dance Arts and the Philadelphia Dance Company, which is better known as Philadanco. And in 2013, she was recognized for her work by former President Barack Obama with the National Medal of Arts. This evening, Philadanco teams up with the Rennie Harris Pure Movement Dance Company for a special performance at North Carolina State University. But first, Joan Myers Brown joins me in the studio. What a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Tell us more about being raised in Philadelphia, which I understand is a city that had a long-established culture for African-American ballet studios, anyway, in that community.
Well, you know, there were two black women that sort of established dance schools there. I was lucky to study with one who wanted also to be ballet dancers, and they sought the making opportunities for black youngsters. So I was very lucky that coming out of a high school dance training program into one of their studios and flourishing, I guess, because I began to teach, and I've taught generations of dancers. But I ended up being a nightclub dancer because I couldn't get a job as a ballet dancer. In fact, I couldn't even go to a non-black school in the city of Philadelphia until maybe Anthony Tudor came to Philadelphia from England and allowed us to come into his classes. And I was the first black student that went into those classes.
Tell us about Anthony Tudor and those classes.
Well, you know, Anthony Tudor was, you know, non-American, so he had a different aesthetic about dance, and he felt that anyone should be able to dance. I know I couldn't get one of the guys to be my partner, so I was always partnered by Anthony Tudor. That made it very special. I learned Sleeping Beauty, Pas de Deux with Anthony Tudor as my partner. But I still, when I performed with the Ballet Guild, I wasn't very happily received because he made it possible for that to happen.
And I understand that you started dreaming about becoming a ballerina when you were very young. Sometimes you would write to Janet Collins, who was the first ballerina at the Metropolitan.
Well, that was while I was studying with Mrs. King. I wrote to Janet Collins, and later I was happily able to bring her to Philadelphia and present her with an award with an association. I started the International Association of Blacks in Dance, as I was able to honor Katharine Dunham, all the people I read about or heard about. So I've been very lucky to be successful at giving back.
Well, lucky and quite talented along the way, too, and persevered under not always easy circumstances. I am curious about your correspondence, though, with Janet Collins. I mean, here you are, a sort of a young girl growing up with aspirations to become, you know, I assume like her. Did you write to her? Did she write back?
Yeah, she did. She sent me a note back. I sent her a photograph of me thinking I was looking marvelous, and she sent me a note back, straighten your knees and keep at it, keep studying. And so I think I had two memos from her that did come back, and she was dancing with the Metropolitan Opera Company then. She was the first black ballerina with them. You know, there are a lot of firsts that didn't go too far.
Yeah, but straighten your knees, huh? You took that to heart.
Yes, I did. And that's something I say repeatedly now to dancers.
You talked about your teacher, Anthony Tudor, who cast you in the Cours de Ballet. He cast you in a ballet.
Les Sophies, yes.
Tell us about that and about the review you got.
Well, actually, if the review was not saying Joan Myers, they said the fly in the buttermilk. The ballet was wonderful except for the fly in the buttermilk. Mm. So we always knew they meant me, the dark spot in the ballet.
How did you receive that?
Well, you know, I was young. I just, you know, living, when you grow up in segregation, there are things you just expect and you just let them roll off of you. And, you know, you say that's part of your life. You hope as I got older to be able to do away with some of those problems. And that's something I'm still working at. We're auditioning girls still now, black girls trying to get them into major ballet companies.
You did at one point decide you really had to step away from ballet and pursue a different form of dance, right?
Well, I don't think I decided that. I think I was invited to do that mm-hmm. when I was looking for a job. One of my friends was working in a nightclub, and one of her co-dancers was pregnant, so they needed a replacement. She said, "You better come get this job." So that's how I started working in nightclubs. And I was very fortunate. I danced with the top acts, Sammy Davis and Pearl Bailey, Nat King Cole. So I always had a good job, but I was always one they put on point.
Well, what was that like for you? I mean, did it feel like did from your point of view, were you dancing and dancing is dancing, or did you always want to get back to
ballet? I always wanted to get back to ballet, and you know, I always said, well, I can't do this. Maybe one day I'll be able to teach another youngster to have this opportunity. And again, as I said, I'm still trying to get black girls into ballet because I think ballet companies have to start looking like America, you know. Can't be lily white forever.
It's amazing. There's still, while there have been advances, it's still a fairly
similar. Well, Pennsylvania Ballet itself is the first time in my history of 47 years that they've had two black girls in the company. So that's quite an accomplishment, I guess. But look how long it took. Look how long it took for them to acknowledge Misty Copeland, you know.
Well, tell us about your decision then to go back to Philadelphia and found a school.
Well, I woke up one morning in a hotel after a nightclub of nightclubbing and decided that enough. Let's do more with your life. I had a mother that was very supportive of my dancing, whatever it was I wanted to do. And she stepped right in and helped me open a school. I worked for 6 years in a nightclub at night, and I would travel between Atlantic City, New Jersey every day, teach ballet in the morning and dance at night until I had 30 kids, then I could afford to have a school.
Knowing how difficult it was for you to break through and to find a career in what is still a segregated world, what were you telling the young girls who were coming to your school? What were your hopes for them?
Actually, I was saying just learn to be the best that you can at this, that maybe one day your opportunity will come. And when 10 years later, I had taught girls who started with me at 6 and 7 who got to be 16 and 17, and I sent them out into the world to try to be dancers, and they bounced back saying there were no jobs. So that's when I decided that maybe I'll start a group. I wasn't thinking of company. That wasn't my ambition, to give them some experience so that they could move on. I seem to have founder's disease. Things always find a need for something, and I try to produce something that will help someone else.
Well, tell us about that, because I think you've just begun to describe the evolution of Philadanko and how that got started for you.
Well, it did. You know, when I was teaching the girls, you know, there were ladies' clubs in Philadelphia who always wanted dancers to dance for free. So I would send them out, let them dance, and they were pretty good. And then the National Endowment for the Arts came into existence, and I was able to get one of the first grants for Expansion Arts, which was a program that the National Endowment provided assistance to artists of color, Native American, Asian, blacks. You could get a grant from them. So I got one of those first grants, thought I was rich. Then there was a CEDAR program, so I convinced them to let us be part of CETA, the Comprehensive Educational Training Act, right. One of the first arts groups
part
in Pennsylvania.
Poverty, yeah.
In Pennsylvania to get one of those grants. So I was able to pay those kids $150 a week to come to dancing school. And we started dancing. We got invited to New Jersey. Funny, I'm going to New Jersey next week. And that we thought we were touring. Then we got invited to New York. And it just took off from then.
These days, of course, Philadanko has a specific aesthetic that people will recognize and understand that is that style of dance. Was that did that evolve, or was that something that you had from the start?
I think it's a mixture of my nightclub work, my ballet training, an introduction of modern dance, and also just wanting to be good and to provide dance that was entertaining, but also proficiently trained dancers. So they call it the Philadelphia aesthetic. I can't identify it. It's just what I do with encouraging dancers and producing dancers. My dancers usually graduate from Philadanko into the Ailey Company, but now they're on Broadway and Las Vegas and doing, having their own companies. I've got a, you know, Lee Daniels, who produces The Empire. He was one of my dancers. Leslie Odom from Hampton was one of my dancers. So they go all kinds of directions. I have a dancer who's a councilwoman in the city. And I find that just producing good dancers with quality training and also making sure that they know about what's the appreciation of the art form, what it means to their lives.
It's an art form, but as you say, we have founder's disease, and that means some kind of executive skill and business skills. This is a business. You've got to keep it going. What, first of all, what qualified you, and what have you learned along the way about running an operation?
Well, I say I had on-the-job training with dance. I did take a course in arts management for about 6 months, and I like, that's not working for Black people. You know, you can forget that. I'm going to have to find out how to do this. You have to go around the back door and under the table sometimes to get the things you need. And not that much has changed. I'm still suffering from, I call it racism, but that's not really the word. You know, not being provided with the opportunities that other organizations get. Still, next month I'm getting an award for it. What do you call it? Business icon. I say, if I'm a business icon, how come I'm broke? But, you know, we're still trying to keep the company alive. It'll be 50 years, and 2020 will be our 50th anniversary. And I just want to make it that far.
Well, it is an accomplishment to keep any organization alive that long. And I wonder if that's any part of the training. Certainly dance and the arts is your focus. But it does seem to me that people who go through your program could also understand how to put together an arts program and run it.
Yeah, well, you know, the business of the arts is important. And I think the International Association of Blacks in Dance, now in its 30th year, which I started in 1988, is a training ground for lots of organizations. So that's something I'm really proud of. I have a long list of things I've founded. It's about that right now. And I'm working again, trying to get Black girls into ballet.
Well, you talked about the opportunities. They are growing somewhat, but there are still a number of Black dance companies and dance companies that are predominantly white. Is there any move toward more diversity? And I'm not only talking about racial, but even in body type and all the kinds of things we might
want to
see.
Well, that's one thing
on stage.
That I do. I say that we have all races, and I try to keep my company integrated because I can't talk about prejudice and practice it too. I have a girl from Nicaragua. I have a white girl. I have a Latino guy. You know, I just look for good dancers now. My initial thought was putting Black girls on ballet companies, and that's still my goal, to make sure that more companies. And our audition last year, we had 101 Black girls come from all over the world, Joffrey Ballet, San Francisco Ballet, Pennsylvania. They gave these girls opportunities, and I want to make sure more of that happens.
Is there something, though, about when we talk about body type, and of course that has been one longstanding prejudice in the world of dance in terms of the kinds of bodies we want to see on stage, but also racially, if we've gotten to the point where Black body types, Black bodies in general, are something that have to be seen as separate from the dance and from the art of choreography?
Well, you know, I have that question all the time. Girls ask me about, well, they say my body is wrong. I think you can take your body and find a place for your body. I mean, there are companies where being heavy doesn't matter, the folkloric company or the ethnic companies, or where color doesn't matter. But it's what you want to do with your body that makes it difficult sometimes. And I think we've proven that the body can do what it needs to do if given the opportunity.
I want to talk to you about the upcoming performance this evening at North Carolina State. You know, you've teamed up with Rennie Harris, Pure Movement, and you're going to perform something called Straight Out of Philly. Tell us more about that.
Well, Rennie Harris rehearses at my studio. They use my facility for their rehearsals. And the director, the manager of the company, and I will always talk about the lack of touring or how touring has changed. And we said, we should put these two companies together and do something so we can tour more. And with my season, I'm the resident company at the Kimmel Center. My season at the Kimmel Center, I used that as an opportunity to put the two companies together to see if it would work. And everybody loved it. And we showcased it. And we got a few bookings out of it. It's very difficult because it's a large company. Both of us have large companies, and it's very expensive. So there's not a lot of touring out of it. But it clicked to show that there are two separate different companies in Philly we're a modern company, they're a hip-hop company, and we're going to come together and do a good show and show people what comes out of Philadelphia. And that Straight Out of Compton allowed us to kind of steal that and call it Straight Out of Philly. Because he's from Philly, I'm from Philly, the company's headquartered in Philly, and we're dancing all over Philly.
I am talking with the founder and artistic director of Philadanko, Joan Myers Brown, today on The State of Things. Got a performance tonight at North Carolina State University with Rennie Harris Pure Movement, Straight Out of Philly. Tell us a little bit more about this particular performance and what we're going to see.
Well, we're doing two modern ballets. He's doing two hip-hop ballets. And at the end, we come together with a ballet that he originally choreographed for Philadanko when I tried to make my dancers think that they could be hip-hop dancers. And it turned out very well. It's very exciting to see the two companies together. People say you can't tell who's who, which company is which when we're together. And it's a crowd pleaser, and it's really a wonderful piece. And it's about the MOVE situation in Philadelphia when the city bombed the MOVE headquarters, which they called it a cult, which was really a religious group. And in fact, Ramona Africa, one of the survivors of that bombing, her grandchildren come to my dance school now. So when we started to do this ballet, she does the voiceover on it. So it's
the granddaughter of one of this is to remind people, this was an episode where the police, actually a police helicopter, dropped a bomb on row houses in Philadelphia that housed the members of this religious organization. 11 people were killed.
And two people survived, Ramona and her nephew.
And her granddaughter is in
her. Two of them are still in my school now. In fact, Rain, who's graduating from going to high school this year, going to college this year, right? And her little sister, they've been at my school. And Ramona comes and sits in sometime and waits for them. So it's quite an opportunity to know that she's a survivor.
Yeah.
She's a survivor.
You talked about the way things touring has changed, and that was some of the impetus behind, you know, this joint production. Well, how have things changed?
Well, first of all, with Philadanko, when people used to couldn't get Alvin Ailey, they would book Philadanko. Now Alvin Ailey has Ailey 2. So people that would originally repeat us now bring in Ailey 2. They got the brand. If they can't get Ailey, they get Ailey. So we've lost a lot of our touring. Even in Europe, a lot of places where we used to tour, they used to bring us back repeatedly, now replace us. Funding for arts organizations, presenters, and companies has diminished. In Philadelphia, it's almost non-existent. If it weren't for money out of New York, I probably wouldn't be around. Touring has changed. Presenters are not being funded. In Pennsylvania, we had a whole system that funded just Pennsylvania, which is gone. So it's problematic, and we don't know how long it's going to be, or if it's going to continue, or if it's going to be different.
What does it take, then, to get attention and to keep the funding coming?
Well, you know, now I find So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars and Can You Think You Can Dance and all these television shows have changed the perspective of people, what they want to see. So when you have a concert, they're not always interested because it's not quite as entertaining. And I think also, I think the technology of looking at your video camera or looking at your computer, you can see what you want to see. You don't have to buy a ticket. So there's lots of things, you know, and we always have to think, what can I do to make sure they buy me or sell me? And so that was probably one of the things we were thinking of. What can we do different to get work?
Well, if anybody can come up with an answer, it is Joan Myers Brown. She's been doing it for years now, and what a pleasure to have you on our program. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Joan Myers Brown, the founder and artistic director of the Philadelphia Dance Company, which is better known as Philadanko. Philadanko and Rennie Harris Pure Movement Dance Companies present Straight Out of Philly this evening at North Carolina State University's Stewart Theater in Raleigh. And we have more information, of course, at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, two best-selling novels about 20th century women who get a raw deal. We'll talk with the author just ahead. Stay tuned.